भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 6th canto, 1st chapter, Hare Krishna. The history of the life of Ajamila, and now text number 53, this beautiful Monday morning. Day before Halloween. I think tomorrow's Halloween.
Na-hi kaschit kshanam api yatu tishtati karmakrit karyate hi avashaha karma gunai svabhavikai balat Nahi kaschit kshanam api yatu tishtat yakarma krit karyate yavasha karma gunai svabhavikayar balat Nahi kaschit kshanam api Yatu tishtatya karma krit Kayate hiyavasha karma Gunai svabhava kayar bala Nahi kaschit kshanam api Yatu tishtatya karma krit Kāyate yavasa karma Gunai svabhava kāyar balat Nahi kaschit kshanam api Jātu tishtatya karma krit Kāyate yavasa karma Gunai svabhavikayar balat Nahi kaschit kshanam api Jātu tishtatya karma krit Kāyate yavasa karma Gunai svabhavikayar balat Na, not, he, indeed, kaschit, anyone, kshanam api, even for a moment, jatu, at any time, tishtati, remains a karmakrit, without doing anything. Kāyate, he is caused to perform. He, indeed, avashaha, automatically, karma, fruitive activities, gunai, by the three modes of nature, svabhavikai, which are produced by his own tendencies in previous lives. Balat, by force. Translation. Not a single living entity can remain unengaged, even for a moment. One must act by his natural tendency according to the three modes of material nature because this natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The swabhavika, or one's natural tendency, is the most important factor in action. One's natural tendency is to serve, because a living entity is an eternal servant of God. The living entity wants to serve, but because of his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord, he serves under the modes of material nature and manufactures various modes of service, such as socialism, humanitarianism, and altruism. However, one should be enlightened in the tenets of Bhagavad Gita and accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one give up all natural tendencies for material service under different names and take to the service of the Lord. One's original natural tendency is to act in Krishna consciousness, because one's real nature is spiritual. The duty of a human being is to understand that since he is essentially spirit, he must abide by the spiritual tendency and not be carried away by material tendencies. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has therefore sung, has to forgive my Bengali mispronunciation, Nitya Mayara Vashe Yatscha Veshe Katscha Pabububu Bhai. My dear brothers, you are being carried away by the waves of material energy and are suffering in many miserable conditions. Sometimes you are drowning in the waves of material nature, and sometimes you are tossed like a swimmer struggling in the ocean. As confirmed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this tendency to be battered by the waves of Maya can be changed to one's original natural tendency, which is spiritual. When the living entity comes to understand that he is eternally Krishna Das, servant of God Krishna. Jiva Krishna Das E Vivasha Karle Ta'ara Dukkha Nai. If instead of serving Maya under different names, one turns his service attitude toward the Supreme Lord, he is then safe and there's no more difficulty. If one returns to his original natural tendency to the human form of life by understanding the perfect knowledge given by Krishna himself in the Vedic literature, one's life is successful. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Kauravani Pacharita Ivishesha Sunya Varipatrachare Sitara Om Angyara Chimarantasya Gananjana Chulakaya Chaksur Bhutam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpatubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Titanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Nahi kaschit shanam api jatu tishtati akarmakrit. No one remains even for a moment, no living entity even for a moment is akarmakrit without doing something. We have to be doing something at every time. And how does he act? He's caused to perform karyate avasha karma. He has to perform activities avashaha. Here it says automatically. You're impelled to do it. You have to do it according to gunai, balat, by the power of your mode, the mode of nature in which you're situated, which are swabhavika, your own nature.
here, which are produced by his own tendencies in previous life. Whatever mode of nature you're in now, and Lord, that's a product of your past activities. That'll be described further in the next verse. Right? So, first of all, let us ask, is this true? Because everyone has to act, and then we think of that for, not even for a moment. What about the famous couch potato? The slacker? The person who tries to do nothing? But they work at doing nothing. And so even those who aspire to a state of inactivity, they have to strive for it. It's hard to do, actually. And today we're aided by so much machinery, like the remote. So the couch potato today can change the channels by not just by his thumb. But that's action. That's action. And he has to raid the refrigerator periodically and eat. That's also action. And use the toilet. Now, how is this person being supported in this activity? Well, it seems there's three choices. One, he has to work. So ultimately, he has to do some service, as he has to work. And so that's required, somehow or other. To live in this world, you need money, and to get money, you usually have to work. The other option is crime. you can perform criminal activities. Because you say, I don't want to serve anybody, I just want to do my own thing. And so then you turn to crime. Then, in the course of time, you get caught. And then also you have to serve. Because you're put in jail, you're not being productive in any way, but still you're obeying the order of someone else. When Prabhupada uses this term service, one is that you are acting according to somebody else's direction. So service is of two kinds. There's voluntary and involuntary. So if you don't do voluntary service, then involuntarily you have to serve. Somebody dictates, somebody tells you what to do. Voluntarily, you agree to do it. And then, of course, the idea of service is that you are acting for somebody else's benefit. Even if you're completely selfish, you usually have to get money and therefore work for an employer. You have to please other people in some way or another. You're forced to actually do something for somebody else's benefit. People want to become completely selfish, and I can act only for my own benefit. And then in another sense you're serving, because although you think I'm only doing what I want, what you want is being dictated by the modes of material nature. I want to do whatever I like. And so in the course of that, you get various appetites which you have to satisfy. I don't want to serve God. I don't want to serve anybody. I don't want to serve my employer. I just do my own thing. Sort of satisfy my desires. But the desires become the master. You want to have sex whenever you like, then you cannot stay peacefully at home. You have to go out searching at night for sexual partners. You want to smoke cigarettes whenever you like, or take drugs whenever you like. You have to go. You're forced, you're impelled to do these things. At 3 o'clock in the morning, you run out of cigarettes and you have to go to the Wawa. You're not in control. You can't decide, oh, I don't want to serve these desires. I'd rather take it easy today or do something else. No, you become the slave of your habits, your desires. So in any case or another, you're serving in the sense of obeying the dictates of someone else, or at least the material nature is dictating what you do, your swabhavaka, your various things. So everyone is acting. The Bhagavad Gita even describes that one has to see action in inaction and inaction in action. Meaning that those people, sometimes having understood the notion that karma or action is the cause of bondage, people by spiritual progress, by some spiritual process, try to refrain from action. And so the yogi will try to control the senses and control the mind and not do anything whatsoever. But that's also a kind of action. You're acting out of fear of further birth or for desire for liberation. And so you want something from what you're doing. So it's also a kind of karma. You're very active to become free from karma. Is another kind of action. So you have to see action and inaction. So many times people don't do anything out of fear or cowardice or whatever. That's also a kind of action. And you can also see inaction in action, that is to say, one who is working with all the senses but entirely for the benefit of Krishna, that produces no karma. Karma means, Arjuna asks Krishna, what is karma? And he says, karma are actions that pertain to the production of material bodies. That produces a future material body. So that's the strict definition of karma. Then if I act in such a way that doesn't produce future births, that's not karma. That's not karma. It's not karma, it's not bhikarma, but it's akarma. Even though I'm doing so many things. Because only those actions which produce future births or which I have some desire for the result. So even those who are it's described like this in the Bhagavatam, moksha kama. Those who are moksha kama, who are lusting after moksha. Those people also have desires. But it's sarva karma, moksha kama udhanti. A kama, sarva kama, va moksha kama, whether you are a kama, that means a devotee, desireless, a kama, or sarva kama, or all desires, or moksha kama. In that verse, whatever it is that they recommend you worship the Supreme Lord. So one has to act by his natural tendency according to three modes, because this natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. So the person that we think of as a couch potato is actually acting in the mode of ignorance, trying not to do anything, but still he's acting that way. Then of course the mode of passion impels one's fruitive activities. Sometimes also, you see people in the mode of ignorance, sometimes they look like they're doing nothing, laying down, intoxicated. Also, somebody in the mode of goodness may not look like they're doing anything, because their activity is intellectual. They can just sit still all day long thinking like crazy. That's their work. Very heavy to pick up ideas, lift them and carry them around. I'm very tired. They work also. Although a person who doesn't know may say they're just sitting there doing nothing. staring out the window. Why don't you do something? I'm busy.
No. So everybody's working according to that kind of impulses there that directs people. So interestingly enough, where svabhavikai is glossed in the word for word as produced by his own tendencies in previous lives, and then in the natural tendency according to the mode of material nature in the translation, when we come to the purport, we get a much deeper meaning of svabhavika, your own nature. What is your own nature? He says it's the natural tendency, the most important, he says, probably the most important factor in action. And then why? Because one's natural tendency is to serve, because a living entity is an eternal servant of God. So that's the real svabhavika. Your nature according to the soul. The soul itself has its own characteristic. And each jiva is Prabhupada uses his constitutional position. That which by which you are made what you are. Your defining essential characteristic. Also another word for this is dharma. Your essential nature. And that is to serve Krishna. So, because this is our spiritual position. This is as a soul. This is free from all upadis or material designations. When all the material designations are gone, still there's a spiritual natural tendency. Because we find out that even in transcendence, there are varieties. So the Upanishads say, nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bhuvanam yogadhyata kama. So when it's talking about nitya is singular, nityanam, genitive plural, there is one singular nitya among many, 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 many unlimited really nityas. Chetana. So nitya is a characteristic not of the material body, but of the soul. The soul is nitya. So we're not talking about material distinction. We're talking about spiritual distinction. Nitya, nityanam. Chetanas. There's one chetana, chetananam, or many, one conscious entity among many, many entities. So then the next, eko bahuna, one and many. Eko bahunam yo vidati kaman. One is the one that's really maintaining the many. The one, in other words, the idea of the one is independent and the many are dependent. So what this says is there's a class division in transcendence. There's the category or the class of the one. Sometimes in mathematics we talk about a set that has only one member. So this is the set that has only one member. The set of God. No one is equal, no one is greater. And the set that has only one member. And then the other set, Nityanam Chetananam, is unlimitedly full. We have peers. We are crowded together. So the one is called Vishnu Tattva, and the many is called Jiva Tattva. So they're differently constituted. The one is independent, and the many are dependent. So it's the essential nature of the jiva tattva that they serve Vishnu tattva. That's just how we are constituted. Of course, there's the other Mayavad philosophy who wants to get rid of all this distinction and say there's only one blob. There's one indistinguishable
homogeneous. That's not, that's clearly what the Vedas don't say. Because sometimes the stress is there on oneness because both are nitya, both are chaitanya. So certainly the qualitative oneness, but here the distinction is there, the one and the many. The eka and the bahuna. Eka, one, and the one are dependent, the many are dependent on the one. That is to say, we can see right now in our condition that we need so many things just to stay alive. We need air. We need water. We need heat. We need food. We have so many requirements. And those requirements are being supplied. Prabhupada says that in the material world, actually, every living entity that's here, by divine arrangement, has everything he needs. So that, he really says there's no need to strive so hard. If you're here, God has provided. You say, well, so many people are starving. But that's because there's a disturbance in the divine plan because one group is taking what belongs to another. So what we are allowed, what's our share, according to the Upanishad, that is there. And so as soon as we encroach upon another's share, then we are violating nature's law. But what do they say about the people of America, which is a small percentage of the total world, is using 60% or something like that of all the energy? 5% of the people, I don't remember the numbers, 5% of the population using 60% of the energy. So that's greed. It's just greedy. So the other people are deprived. And of course, now that those other people are also want to be just like that, like China and India. Well, you're going to run out. You know, 100% of the people can't live like this if they're all going to use it. There's going to be a problem fairly soon. So, that's what happens. But actually, by nature's law, everybody has to supply what you need. Krishna is supplying. Ultimately, Krishna is supplying. Where does the sunlight come from? We need this light. I mean, even at night, so much of our energy comes from stored up sunshine, like in coal or oil. That's sunlight in a different form, stored up. So we need the energy from the sun. It all comes from the sun. And so that. We say, we understand the Vedas that that's from Surya, the sun god. And similarly, for all the supplies that we need are water, that are also Indra or Varuna, our food, other deities, the earth, also Indra, also Chandra. All our supplies are actually being given to us by the devatas system. But the devatas aren't independent. And Krishna explains this in seventh chapter, then they're not independent. So they run out. You're like, I have a certain amount of supply. I have people that are dependent upon me. I have a family man, I have wife and children. They come to me and I open my wallet and give them the credit card. They don't know where it's coming from. My children were little, and he said, we don't have any money. They just go to that machine and get some. Well, that's exactly. So I have to put money in the machine to get it out. So I run out. So my supplies diminish. And I have to get it refilled from somewhere else. The bank balance goes down. The car runs out of gas. We have to go to the grocery store to get our groceries and so on. Refrigerator becomes empty, so we need resupply. But then the agents who supply us, they also need resupply. The grocery store also has to be filled up, and the bank account has to be filled up, and everything resupplied. So the demigods, we trace it back, they also need resupply. So then, according to Vedas, you come to this unique being. The word unique means only one. One of a kind. People say more unique, but that's a misuse. There's a unique being. There's only one. Nitya, Chetana, the singular. And that is unique in that this particular being supplies everybody but does not need any more supplies. He can give 100% and he still has 100%. If I open my wallet and I start giving out money and it stays full, then that would be like, so hand out slices of pizza and the pizza is always whole. This is Krishna's position. He has such a nature that no matter how much energy comes out of him, so no matter how much he gives, he's never depleted. Therefore, he's never a servant. He's always the master. And we're always in need. So we're the servants. You're the maintained, he's the maintainer. So you'll say, well, who maintained God or who created God? No, he's the self-maintaining, the self-created, the self-sufficient sustainer of all others. This is by definition. This is not the idea of God, it's the idea of the absolute truth. This is the idea of the absolute truth. So we are constituted on the serving side in transcendence. We are the jivas. This is our real nature. So what Prabhupada is saying, that even when we turn away from Krishna because of this little particle of freedom that we have, and when we turn away from Krishna, still we cannot entirely negate our own dependence. We cannot become equal to God. We cannot become the absolute truth. We are constituted as the jivas, therefore dependent. Therefore we have to be supplied by someone else and maintained by someone else. That's happening in the material world. Now we think we did it all ourselves. There's some land that's sitting there. It's rich, it's fertile, it's full of natural resources. But we do this thing and say, this is my land. How did that happen? It's all imaginary in a way. There's some paper somewhere that says, my land. You know? But what makes it mine? This property is all imaginary, that I have ownership of anything. So we fall, but actually we are still dependent. Every minute we are dependent upon Krishna. And devotees recognize this. Prabhupada said, when we drink water, we should say, thank you, Krishna, you're quenching my thirst. We should say, here's Krishna sending the sunlight, here's Krishna giving me for everything that's coming from Krishna. But those who are turn away from Krishna, they forget this. And the natural serving tendency also finds other things to serve. Prabhupada mentions these kind of socialism, humanitarianism, altruism. Let me do something. Even a person maintains family members. Mother serves her children. Husband serves a wife and the children. Employers serve a boss. even if they're not particularly altruistic, still they have to work for somebody else's benefit. You always find yourself needing to do that. You have to pay taxes, so you have to serve the government. And then people want to do something, do good for others. So they have these other things, socialism, let me serve humanity, humanitarianism, altruism. Prabhupada calls these extended forms of selfishness. There's narrow selfishness. It used to be narrow selfishness was you took care of your family. Now it's even narrower. You don't even do that. But then there's the other, because you identify yourself, this is my country, you become a nationalist. And you work to gratify other people's senses so they think you're a great guy. You've satisfied my senses. But the people that do this are getting something out of it. Last night I was talking about this, the sun's coming in. I was taught, I should have worn my sunglasses. That's all right. On the airplane I saw this TV program, Extreme Makeover, where these people come in. There seemed to be like, I only saw this one, but there was this lady, this black lady in Watts, who was like a kind of active in the community and helping other people. She was an elderly lady and her husband. And they lived in this wreck of this house. You know, in fact, it was already wrecked. I mean, she always was letting people no place to live stay there. She was cooking for people in the backyard. You know, she was an altruistic lady. And then this bus pulls up full of these happy people in t-shirts. And they're going to give her a new house, you know. And then they come in and they have a tractor and pull down the garage. And they go in and they look what's wrong in this house, this mold here, this room. And they say, what kind of room would you like for her children? And what would you like? And she said, and then they send her off on a vacation. And then they work very hard and they do this makeover for this house. And then she comes back, you know, and she's crying. The church group is there, they're crying. The minister is up front praising God, leading a choir. Okay, so this is like, so these people who are making over the house, they look like totally, they just are just helping other people out of the goodness of their hearts. But of course, they have a TV show and they're making money. Well, they're kind of all really smug, you know. They're like feeling good because they're doing good, you know. They're feeling good about themselves because they're helping this lady and she thanks them. And if she was in India, she would touch their feet, you know. They're all feeling great. Look at them. Because they're like gods, you know. They're feeling good about being gods and helping people. So it's another extended selfishness. And there are other ways. So people, the service tendency is still there. And that means you have to work. You have to act under some dictation of a nature. See, there's two natures. This is one of the things the Prophet said that's really fantastic. He said, there is another nature. That simple sentence. Because people say, it's what I'm doing is natural. And you say, which nature? There is another nature. This is the external potency. Now we are serving according to the dictations of the external potency. But the natural tendency to serve is there really comes into its full manifestation when one serves under the dictation of the internal potency. The other nature, this superior nature. So this Prabhupada calls this original natural tendency. It becomes overlaid, so then there's the service tendency gets misdirected to others. And because it's misdirected, because it's covered, we ultimately are not satisfied. We're ultimately not satisfied. You see sometimes these big altruists or nationalists and everything. Many times we see they do so many things for their country, and then their country turns out to be ungrateful. It's like Winston Churchill, you know, who led England through World War II and was inspired and gave his whole life, you know, to say that he was like the big hero. As soon as the war was over, voted out of office and the Labour government came in. No gratitude whatsoever. This happens so many times. You sacrifice for others and they're not grateful. And the limit of altruism is revealed, because then those people become very cynical and bitter, because they want that appreciation of others. If they don't get it, then they really freak out. But if it was really selfless, you wouldn't actually care. You wouldn't even want anybody to know about it. So this is that one is not satisfied ultimately, because it's not our original natural tendency. So Prabhupada says the duty of a human being is to understand that since he is essentially spirit, he must abide by the spiritual tendency and not be carried away by the material tendency. So here in the embodied, there's two warring tendencies. And so the material tendency may carry us away. So that's described as being in an ocean by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the waves of the material. And when you're in an ocean, you can paddle around a little bit, but mostly you're at the mercy of the waves and the currents and the winds. You're really in a helpless state. And Mahaprabhu has it. Ayi nanda turuja kinkaram. I am your servant. Ayi nanda turuja kinkaram patitam mam vishudeva namuto. I am your servant. But I have fallen into the ocean of material existence. I've somehow fallen in this ocean of material existence. So one is in this ocean, which is not only you're helpless, but there are sharks and other things. And, so many disasters and sea stories. So that's basically where this helpful position. Kripaya tava pada bokka desu. So out of your mercy, please pick me up. One has to be extracted from the soldier and be rescued. You cannot get out. We use the example of sometimes people try to get out of the ocean by their own means. It's like trying to be pulled by holding onto the tail of a dog. it will not work. So you're going up and down, you're swimming, struggling. It's a helpless tendency. So then when one understands my real nature, Krishna does, then please fix me up at one of the moats does at your lotus feet. Then everything is fine. But that means that now I serve Krishna. All my actions are governed. Even in the beginning, maybe there's not so much direct feeling for a personal relationship with Krishna. Therefore, we have devotees who are Krishna's representative. Let me serve you. Let me do some service. Service means you are engaged in Krishna's service, so I will serve you. and then I'm act under that order. If my acts are done in fulfillment of the order of Krishna, the order of the spiritual master, then there's no karma. Now, actually, I'm really free from bondage in the material world. I've been picked up. Even though I may be here, I'm picked up. If there's another dictation for fruit of activity, then that dictation is the cause of future bondage. So in any case, we have to serve a master. Which master shall it be? So in the material world, we come here and people think they're free, I can do whatever I want, I can make myself, I don't have some nature, I can be whatever I want to be. You know, you see these propaganda like that, be whatever you want to be. Go to the army, right? fulfill your potential and so on. People think they make themselves, that they don't have any nature, that they can be whatever they want to be, just their own wills and their own desires. That's an illusion. So we are actually in this way. If we see the previous lives, the future lives, we can understand how things are working. Okay. Any questions?
How about service? Your parents are not Krishna conscious. How can they expand on
it? Yeah, that's also pious. It's pious activity. And there's no harm in doing that unless it becomes detrimental to Krishna consciousness. If by serving my parents, who will only be pleased if I get a certain job in a certain position, I will not be a devotee, then sarvadharman put it to job. Because sometimes when you come to Krishna, what is pious becomes impious. Because the whole point of morality and duty is to bring one closer to Krishna. But when it comes to surrender to Krishna, if that same morality and duty stands in the way, then what is the use of it? So if there's a conflict like that, the classic case of this is when Krishna ordered Yudhisthira to lie. You know the story from the Mahabharata? Yudhisthira, and during the battle of Kurukshetra, the idea was that Dronacharya, who was fighting on the other side, should be killed, but there was some condition that he could not be killed unless he thought that his son, Ashwatthama, was dead. So it became necessary to convince him that Ashwatthama was dead. But he would suspect a trick. But Krishna realized that Yudhisthira, who had never told a lie in his life, and what was the embodiment of truthfulness, if he told Dronacharya that Ashwatthama was dead, Dronacharya would believe him. So he told Yudhisthira to lie to Dronacharya. And Yudhisthira hesitated to obey Krishna. And Prabhupada said for that he had to see hell. So there was actually a consequence of that because he hesitated. So Prabhupada's point is that when it comes to serving Krishna, what is immoral becomes, but what is moral can become immoral. And conversely, here's a little boy who's just seen his father viciously slain, and he's glorifying his father's killer and putting a garland on him. Well, the boy is Prahlad, and his father's Hiranyakashipu. So that way, that's moral. Even though ordinarily you would think this was an immoral thing to do. So the ultimate moral, that's why Krishna said, sarva dharmam parityaja. Because someone say, well, if I become a devotee, I have to disobey my parents. Isn't that a sin? Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. No, don't worry. If you to do surrender to me, you have to perform something that looks like a sin. I'll protect you from all. Don't worry. Otherwise, these things should be done. One has obligations towards one's parents. Especially if you're a devotee, you can really fulfill your obligation by making them Krishna conscious, or even they naturally, if you're a devotee and they love you because you're your son, they'll end up loving you because you're a devotee without even knowing it. But Prabhupada says that one becomes a devotee so many generations back and forth, become liberated. So it's the best thing you can do for these things. But if it stops you from Krishna consciousness, then you have to give it up. Is that clear? Yeah. So, Prabhupada ki jai.